Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Nick Daschle of the Oregonian covers Oregon State. Had a great piece today where he talked about the transfer portal. Jonathan Smith, the Oregon State football coach, living in the portal. Here's Daschle joining us. What do you mean by that? What got you onto this story?
Well, I mean, we've been talking for quite a while about Oregon State and the transfer portal, and every time you turn around, they've got another player. So I just kind of went through the roster and started looking at, who could start this year and making up a depth chart, and I came up with a dozen guys that are pretty good chance they could start. I don't think they all will, but I think there's a pretty good chance that, between 9 and 12 transfers are going to start for Oregon State this fall. And even when I mentioned it to Johnson last week at Media Day, I mean, he was a little surprised. I mean, not totally, but he was a little surprised that the number was that high.
Yeah, it's really interesting because – I have long felt that Oregon State should live in the portal. Did that happen by design, or were they just looking for opportunities and players were there?
Well, I mean, to start off with, in 2018, before the portal became a thing, I think it was October 15th, 2018, when the portal became official, Oregon State had four transfers that fall before then, and they all turned out to be, serviceable players: Jebbia, Avery Roberts, Tyshawn Lindsey, and Addison Gums. I mean, they've all started at some point in their Oregon State career, and at least Avery Roberts has become a real star for them. And I think that's where Johnson started thinking, we're having some success with this, and then the portal became an avenue to start finding players, and so they've really made it a priority. I mean, they're still the focus is still on getting high school players and JC transfers on signing day. But I mean, these transfers can really fill in some immediate needs that they have, which in 2018 were sizable, and they still need them. That's kind of where this all started, was back in 2018.
What advantage do they have even over other schools within their own conference in living in the portal a little more?
Well, I mean, the first thing a transfer is looking for is an opportunity. I mean, that's probably one, two, and three is their priorities. And, at the time, the last few years, Oregon State's had plenty of opportunity. I mean, I don't know if you happen to see some of the transfer numbers from this past year, but I mean, it's no surprise Arizona brought in 16 transfers. Well, they've got a lot of opportunity, and Oregon State was in the same boat. And until they prove to be a winning program, I think they're going to continue to bring in players. I think they always will, but right now, until they start winning 7, 8, 9, 10 games, I think the transfer market's always going to be there for Oregon State to look at. And I mean, as I mentioned, with the 12 guys, up to 12 guys starting, I mean, it's pretty valuable, especially if this team, becomes a bowl team.
Are there certain positions where there's more opportunity in the portal?
Oh, I think for start, the defensive line, they're always going to be interested in the guy that can play there because, they need some size, and you always need guys there. You need 6, 7, 8 guys on your defensive line, and they're always searching for those guys. That would be the first place. And the second place, and one place they've really brought in guys, is receiver, because they'll play 6, 7, 8 receivers in a game, and if you can find a game changer or two, that's big. I mean, they've got four of them, And I don't know that all, I don't know if the starting three will be all transfers, but there's a chance, and they'll definitely all be in the mix for, you know, some pretty good playing time. So I would say receiver, defensive line. I think they're always interested in finding a secondary guy, especially a cornerback that could play. They got Elijah Jones from Kansas. He's a grad transfer. They needed that guy. Those would be the starting places, but you know, pretty much throughout the roster, they're willing to look for guys. There's always a need.
Nick Daschle with us of the Oregonian. Daschle, this upcoming season, we talk about bowl eligibility a lot when it comes to Oregon State and what is successful and not successful. But, you know, in your eyes, where is the marker for success at Oregon State?
Well, if you could tell me right now that the injuries will be minimal, they got to get to a bowl this year. I mean, there's just no question about it. They're in the fourth year of a rebuild. They've got a decent schedule. It's a tough schedule, but it's a manageable schedule. And they've got experience at a lot of the key positions. So providing they don't, get a ton of injuries, this is a team that should win at least five games, probably six, threaten to win seven or eight if the breaks go the right way. Now, I mean, we don't, again, we don't know about the injuries, but that's what it looks like to me. And I think that's what a successful season looks like for Oregon State.
Jonathan Smith, on media day, I think he accepted the challenge. Like, they want to be bowl eligible. They want to win as many games as they can. They want to get there. The quarterback position is going to be really a key for them. How do you feel that they are positioned right there? He keeps saying he likes the whole room, but who's going to be the guy getting the snaps?
Well, I mean, the way I see it going into camp, I see, Tristan Jebbia having maybe a half of a foot ahead of Sam Neuer and Chance Nolan with the Sam Bidlack kind of a distant fourth, just because he's a freshman and he's really only had a spring practice to learn their system. And that's the only reason, Sam Neuer is a little bit behind Jebbia, because he doesn't have a ton of experience in Oregon State system, even though he's worked with Brian Lindgren when those two were at Colorado. So they have some familiar there. But Johnson told me they were going to, they're going to give them all a good amount of reps with the ones and twos the first 2 weeks of practice, and then they've got to whittle it down to two guys. And then from there, I don't really expect them to name a starter until camp ends on the 26th. It'll probably be around the 27th or 28th, they'll probably know who the starting quarterback is, unless it just becomes obvious during camp. But if it's close, I don't think he's going to name anybody until then. But I mean, I like Tristan Jebbia, but I'm intrigued to see what Sam Neuer can do with his offense. I kind of think it's those two, but provided that Jebbia is, his injury is behind him and all that, I really think it's between those two.
Daschle, on Pac-12 Media Day, the commissioner of the conference basically said, look, we're going to be about winning championships now. Forget parity. And, he had to ask the ADs, are you all on board with this? Because it's not that, you're going to get a raw deal, but, there might be a favorable scheduling. USC, Oregon, Washington going to get some more favorable scheduling options, kickoff times, bye weeks, because they want to protect their best teams. Is that going to sit well with everybody in the conference, or what did you think of that?
Well, nobody's going to publicly come out and say that's a bad idea, because then they're saying their program isn't as good as everybody else. But yeah, I mean, I think we'll find out. I mean, let's say Oregon State, who would not be considered, one of the blue bloods, if they end up kicking off at 7:30, four out of their six home games, I don't think that's going to set well with the fan base. But you know, I guess it's incentive there to win. I think what he's saying, everybody has to kind of be on board with, because if you're not on board with that, then, you know, what are we playing for? I mean, we're not playing to be mediocre. We're playing to win championships. And so I think everybody's just so refreshed to not have Larry Scott around.
Yeah, I think everybody's happy about that. The officiating in the conference, it came up at media day, but it was kind of waved off as, you know, hey, there's nothing to see here. Do you believe that the Pac-12 needs to improve its officiating? Do they just have bigger fish to fry right now? Is that why they don't want to talk about it, or is talking about it not a productive thing if you're George Kliavkov?
Well, I don't know what he can say at this point. I think really all you can say is, you know, we want to be as good as we can be, and then we'll find out when a situation pops up. We'll see just how good they want to be. You know, so at this stage, I don't know what else he could say. But yeah, I mean, they need to be better. I mean, that's pretty obvious. They need to be better, but I don't think we're going to really know until we start seeing, you know, some situations pop up this fall. And see how, you know, George and his people react to the situations.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, there's a lot on his plate right now, and he's coming in and he's facing realignment, SEC grabbing Texas and Oklahoma, a whole bunch of discussion points. Pac-12, Big 12 alliance, Pac-12, Big 10 alliance. Do you think either one of those makes sense to you?
Well, I mean, as much as you'd like to be aligned with the Big Ten, I think the Big 12 just might make more sense just because of the time, you know, the time zones. But I don't really, I'm not really sure what alliance means. Is it all sports, just football, football and basketball? Because, I mean, the football schedules are pretty well set up years down the road. And, you know, like for an Oregon State, for example, you know, they pretty much have their one Power Five team they want to play every year, and they're not going to schedule a second one unless they're forced to, because they want to follow the, you know, the formula of, you know, one good team, one middle of the road Mountain West team, and then, you know, one team they can beat up on, like an FCS team. So I don't know. I think the Big 12 might make more sense, but then again, we don't know what the Big 12 is going to look like. We don't even know if it's going to be.
Right.
There's just no telling what they're going to be like. I think the Big 12 right now has got to reach out and you know, they're desperate, and they got to latch on to somebody. And so, you know, the Pac-12 is as close to them as they can get. But I don't think the Pac. I mean, does it make any sense for the Pac-12 to take any of the Big 12 existing teams?
No,
I don't see where it's a win for them.
Doesn't add anything. Baylor,
no.
TCU, doesn't add anything. Yeah, I'm with you on that. What about, you know, F. King Alexander out as president at Oregon State? Oregon State operating with an interim president now, presumably will launch the search for a new president. Does that affect athletics at all?
I don't think so. Not right now. I think they'll want to keep an eye on who's out there as candidates, but I don't for this upcoming year. It's all about. I mean, this is a really big year for Oregon State athletics in terms of what they could do. I mean, you look at the football team, you know, possibly getting to a bowl game. You know, the men's basketball team's got some momentum after last year. The women's basketball team has got a lot of, you know, good pieces coming back. The baseball team has got, I think. From what I understand, you know, the offensive side could be really exciting. This could be a really big year for athletics. Then you throw in the Reser Stadium remodel. So I don't know what a president's going to do, you know, on an interim basis to, you know, sidetrack any of that. I just think they need to keep an eye on, you know, who might be our leader, you know, after, you know, into 2023 and beyond.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm glad the Reser Stadium project got off the ground and the presidential stuff came after that, because I worry that, you know, would that have been a distraction for the Board of Trustees, et cetera. Nick Daschle is with us. All right, we talked success off the top. You talked about the transfers that are going to be part of the program. We talked about the quarterback. Let's set an over-under on total wins for Oregon State this season. Is it fair to just say the over-under is 5?
Yeah, I would say 5. I mean, 5.5, because you always, you know, have to, you can't end on a tie. And so I'm going to say 5.5. When I did a bunch of, you know, looks at all the teams that they're playing this year, I came up with a 6-6 record. And I included a loss to Purdue. I don't think they have to win the Purdue game to win 6 games this year, because I think Jonathan's teams have proven they get better as the season goes on. I think there's a stretch about 2/3 of the way through the season that they could win 2 or 3 games consecutively and get to the 6 wins. But if they do win the Purdue game, I mean, that would be really big.
Nick Daschle of the Oregonian, living in the transfer portal with Oregon State. Thank you, my friend.
All right, we'll see you.
There he is. Daschle, Oregon State's got its own model. I said years ago, there's 2 ways to get to the top of a tree. You can catapult yourself there, or you can sit on the ground, plant the seed, then sit on top of it, water it. Oregon State using a little catapult with the transfer portal. I want you to leave it here. The Culligan Water Cooler Report is coming up next. Saw an alarming story this morning. Guys, the minivan is coming back. It's making a comeback. The minivan. Are you going to drive minivans, guys? You're family guys.
It takes me back. My dad had an old GMC, two-toned with some chrome in the middle. And then my mom had the Toyota Previa. It looks like a hard-boiled egg driving down the highway. That's the minivan I grew up on right there.
I love that minivan. There's nothing like, you know, these days, especially. I noticed this when I was in L.A. for the Pac-12 Media Day. I rented a car. You know how hard it is to rent a car these days?
What'd you go with?
I ended up with a Prius. It was not my favorite car to ever drive.
No, you don't say.
What? Very confusing car.
Yeah.
Had this big knob on the dashboard that was like the gear shifter. It didn't make any sense to me.
It can be herky-jerky if you're not familiar with that.
Yeah, and not only that, I had a few times where I got out of the car and I left. I came back, the car was still running. Forgot to turn it off twice. Not an isolated incident.
Wish I could have gone with you.
Yeah, I was at a gas station and at one time and I was like putting gas in the car and I'm like, is the car still running? Like, what am I doing here? But I'm always envious of like the guy at the valet stand. If you're ever valet parking your car, you'll see the guy that's the valet. He gets to drive all the cars. That guy knows what kind of car he wants to drive because he's driving them all. I can just tell you from my experience renting cars, Toyota Prius, not for me.
No, you need something a little bit more driver friendly than that and a little more stylish. You got some style to you.
It was like driving a golf cart.
What's next, a Nissan Leaf?
No, I can't do it. Zach, I could see you in a minivan. You got married, kids on the way, all that. Like, you know, get a minivan.
Yeah, no, my wife's family has a minivan, and it's very useful for when you're moving from one apartment to the other, which we did a week and a half ago. And we've been setting up for the last week. It's been fun. But I grew up with a Ford Bronco. And that was one we used to take on trips, camping, and all that stuff. So I'd prefer the Bronco over the minivan myself.
All right. This brings us to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. Meet me at the
water cooler. Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
All right, guys, let's talk about Carmelo Anthony to the Lakers. How splashy is it? Is it just cool because it's Carmelo back with LeBron? Is this the missing piece that the Lakers needed? I kind of feel like the Lakers are layering up with Russell Westbrook, Carmelo, LeBron, Anthony Davis. That's going to be a tough team to beat. But is he the missing piece? Judah Newby.
Well, most of me says this is getting way too much attention because it's LeBron, Carmelo, and the Lakers. So it's taking like an outsized role into how much it actually matters. But I put the shoe on the other foot. It's actually a sneaky good fit. You know, Carmelo not expected to do a whole lot defensively for you, especially if Davis and LeBron are already healthy. You've got guys like Russell Westbrook and LeBron James who are both going to drive to the rim and kick out to open shooters. That's what Carmelo does. I mean, that's all he does, basically, is three to the dome and get in the post. At 37 years old, yeah, people are making old jokes. People are making Space Jam jokes. But the reality to me is I actually think he can be a very significant contributor on this Lakers team. And I expect to see him in the Western Conference Finals and probably the NBA Finals. If everyone else is healthy with the Lakers, I think Melo's going to be making shots in the NBA Finals for this Lakers team.
It's going to become obnoxious, though, to see all the, you know, this is 19 years in the making, Carmelo and LeBron on the same team. Zach, is he the missing piece?
No, he's not the missing piece, but what Judah said is he's a good fit. And eventually, I think down the line in the season next year when we see the Lakers in the playoffs, he's going to be making some big shots from the corner. I can just see LeBron driving to the hoop, bulldozing people down that are in his way, and then just throwing it out to Melo. And him splashing a three. So I think he'll play a nice role for the Lakers, but he's in no way the answer. I think, like you said, LA is just building that depth and stacking people on the bench, a lot of experience, because they're going to go for a title once again.
I think Carmelo Anthony to the Lakers is good for ESPN. I think it's good for sports radio. I think it adds a layer to the Lakers. Rob Pelinka, the GM there with the Lakers, is...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.